An ever-changing game, cybercrime, and new threats. Today, in the Upper Cumberland, we've seen it in our own backyard in just the last few weeks. Cookeville Regional, the victim of a cybercrime taking down the network. It's an ever-changing threat that all of us, not just big corporations or big business, need to be aware of. You too can be a victim. The changing face of cybercrime. As we visit with Eric Brown of Tennessee Tech's Cybersecurity Education, Research, and Outreach Center, and Regis Billings, a former supervisory special agent with the FBI.
Eric, we don't think of cybercrime as something that has been around long enough to change, but is it evolving?
Cybercrime has been around for millennia. We just didn't call it cybercrime. Cybercrime is another version of the con game. It's I have been able to technology enhance a way to get a resource from somebody that I would not get otherwise. And we've been able to add technology into that. You know, we had the old West stories of people robbing banks and all that other stuff, or they would hold up the stagecoach. Well, I don't have to hold up stagecoach anymore. I just need to get somebody's password and possibly a PIN, and I'll just go to the bank, go get what I want. So it's not that it's new. It's just there are shinier toys involved. There is convenience involved. We are definitely now a society of convenience. We like having that special little app on our phone that allows us to order our coffee so it's ready when we get there. Heaven forbid we talk to the little squawk box and wait on it. We need it available just the minute we drive in, or we need to be able to move that little dab of money from our savings account to our checking account while we're, you know, sitting in our local fast food restaurant using their free Wi-Fi, bless their heart. You know, it's convenience. And every time we add a convenience, we have to look at a convenience and say, what has this convenience cost me? Because I'm going to pay for the convenience somehow. And that's kind of where the cyber part of it comes in anymore. Our toys, our gadgets, our fancy little thermostats, our little devices that we say, hey, whatever, to make our lives easier. There's unfortunately somebody out there that's going to be looking at trying to, how can I use this device of convenience to make money? To coerce somebody to do something that I need them to do. So it's the same human activity that has happened for years as far as a criminal mindset. It's just we've technology enhanced it now.
Regis, you spent time with the FBI, and the thing that's striking to many of us about cyber crimes, it doesn't feel like there's any way to catch these people. Is that true or false?
Oh, that's actually very false. And even here within the Upper Cumberland, law enforcement has seen a huge success catching some of the bad guys, whether or not you want to call them like these conspirators or spearheading that up. Law enforcement is getting much better. It's absolutely a cat and mouse game. And just like Eric was talking about, the bad guys are revolutionizing the bad criminology that they're doing. And law enforcement kind of has to play a little bit of catch up with that. But oftentimes it feels like we can't catch them, but we are getting there. It's just a lot of times it's not as public facing. Whenever you catch a hacker, that's not as big news as catching El Chapo. So a lot of people actually just don't see those articles or anything else. Within the past couple of months, Jackson County linked up two guys that were involved in hacking within the county. And these were guys on the hook for just over $700,000 worth of cyber criminal activity. And so whenever you start to look at, you feel like we're not catching them, like even in a place like Jackson County, they're doing incredible law enforcement work there against cyber threats and having a significant impact. And again, I didn't see that show up in the local papers or on Facebook, because a lot of times, like especially law enforcement, we don't do a great job of self-advertising if you will. We see it as kind of just part of the job. But then even at that, there's significant impacts on the international front. But oftentimes that doesn't make the news. We're bringing bad guys back internationally all the time for hacking. Or we're turning over the information to the partner countries and letting them take care of the bad guys inside the country, which again, really doesn't make a big splash. There's been a big push recently from the United States Attorney's offices to do a much better job of publishing this whenever there are indictments, whenever there are sentencings. But not only are we trying to play catch up with catching the bad guys, we're also trying to kind of play catch up a little bit on how do we advertise that we're actually making an impact in this space.
Our conversation continues on the changing face of cyber crimes with Regis Billings, a former special agent with the FBI, and Eric Brown with Tennessee Tech.
The whole idea of cyber crimes is fascinating because it touches so many areas of our lives, everything from your financial piece to your the security of your computer to romance. I mean, it's so totally involved today.
And it's cheap. I mean, think about it from the standpoint of the person that's trying to instigate this. Let's just say I want to do a few phishing emails and get them to click a bad link. I don't have to put a lot of effort into that. I can spray and pray, you know, and if I send out 1,000 emails and two of them hit, all right, I'm going to get a little money off two people today. It's cheap. You know, that's part of where the technology has kind of assisted some things is it's easier to, I don't want to say attack in mass, maybe attack is the right word, but I can touch a lot of people quickly where before maybe I couldn't get to as many at one time. So phishing emails, the text messages, you know, we're in the South. These text messages and the phone calls that some of the older generation gets, they're trying to be polite and talk to these people, and then they get drawn into it trying to be polite. Younger generation is kind of picking up on, it's okay, I can hit the I'm not talking to you button. But we see folks that are preying on an older population that's not accustomed to this fast, quick communication and just the sense of urgency that can be created by these emails, the text messages, the phone calls can absolutely just work on a particular population that is very vulnerable and maybe not as technology savvy.
I think it kind of gets attributed to two things. It's the professionalism of the bad guys, if you want to call it that. And then number two, it is the susceptibility of society. So to kind of talk a little bit about my past, Eric had me in class. I'm one of his disappointments. Sorry about that. But no, like whenever I was going through school, it was this long ago that cybersecurity was not a thing. And even my dad was like, why are you doing this computer engineering thing? The internet is going to fade away. I hope that doesn't age us too much, Eric.
No.
But
that's okay, TVs are a fad as well. So
exactly.
And radio.
Yes.
But cybersecurity wasn't even a thing a few years ago. And then it went to information assurance, and then it went to now this concept of cybersecurity. And it's so prevalent that like I can have a conversation with my mom, or my mom is like, is this a scam? So it affects all levels of society. It affects us at home and in our businesses. And the bad guys are really professionalize that, just as there are, you know, good guy jobs, majors, research centers in cybersecurity. The bad guys have self-organized and they're starting to market themselves and create these as a service, like hacking teams, if you will, and starting to advertise on the dark web. And so it's this real professionalization, standardization of the bad guy techniques. And then secondarily, you're right, it's a susceptibility. And you brought up romance scams. I think that that is one of the ones that as AI comes on board, as weird as this sounds, we're going to see a waning of romance scams. And whenever I would go and talk to victims as law enforcement, There were multiple times that a victim would tell me that they thought it was fake, but they wanted to be involved in the scenario, in the scam. Instead of watching soap operas, they wanted to be involved in this real life soap opera themselves and get brought into this. And they would have fights with the criminals. They would have issues with them. They would launder money for them. And so it was a very real relationship that they wanted. And then we kind of start to see the other side of it. The Gen Xers, like our age group, we're so jaded on everything. But you're right. Like, those a little bit older than us are so nice that they're going to get involved with this. And then those younger than us are so sure that they understand technology that they will never get taken advantage of. And that's kind of the two wide spectrums that law enforcement sees very oftentimes is younger because they know TikTok, but they don't know technology and cybercrime. And then you've got the elder fraud and elder scams because, again, they come from a very trusting time frame. But we even see, like, the younger generations get victimized very often because they don't think in terms of, like, smishing that someone could take advantage of text and defraud me.
Okay,
they don't understand those.
What's that? Smishing?
Oh, boy. Yeah, you got to love the technical terms that
smishing
cyber comes up with. So smishing is SMS phishing, and then phishing is a technique used by the bad guys to kind of cast that wide net out to find victims. And so this is a technique that we often see with email, especially. You hear phishing emails, spam, that sort of thing all the time. And these are techniques where the bad guys just throw out this wide coverage on what they're doing and try and hook or net victims and draw them into some other furtherance of a scam and then take advantage of them through that. Just so happens, smishing starts with your text messages, SMS.
The difference between regular crime and this whole area of cybercrime, number one, cybercrime is so enormous. It affects so many parts of our lives. But number two, I think most of us, whether you sit in your home in Sparta or Spencer or Salina or Jamestown, you feel relatively safe from quote-unquote regular crime. But anytime you open your email, it feels like there's almost a cybercrime waiting to happen.
It is very much a shared responsibility between everyone, and it's a societal issue. Like, there's no question about that. And that's kind of the interesting thing, is that whenever we go back to what you would consider to be traditional crime, whether it's drugs, theft, violence, you're right. Those tend to be kind of regionalized. Those are somewhat culturalized. You expect almost like drugs. That's a big city problem.
If I go to Nashville, I might run into that, you know.
Exactly.
Go to Miami or New York City.
But what you're dealing with is completely indiscriminate criminals whenever it comes to the internet. And then beyond that, the bad guys often see us as just Americans. Whether or not we see ourselves as that on a daily basis, the bad guys just really see us as Americans with technology. And so especially if you're a bad guy sitting in Nigeria or Central Africa, you see an American comparatively who is very wealthy, and so you're indiscriminately going to target them. The other aspect of it is, you're just an email address to them. You're just a phone number to them. There's no face. There's no eyes that they have to look at. They're not going to figure out your Facebook profile or watch your TikTok videos. They only care that you've got U.S. dollars. And so that's where it starts to become to them almost a victimless crime because they don't have to interface with that. They don't have to interact with a human. And to them, it transcends geographical borders. They don't care about cities. They don't care about counties. They don't care about states. They see it as this type of target.
It also strikes me, Eric, and you've mentioned this when we visited in the past, that, you know, the regular criminal might think, okay, I'm going to go to that nice neighborhood. I'm going to target homes in that nice neighborhood. Whereas the cyber criminal just says, I'm going to send out 100,000 emails, and if I get 10 back, that's a win.
That's part of it. And, you know, kind of going back to the societal part of this, you also have to consider we've got two generations somewhat separated. I don't know when the Gen Xers become the cynical group, but we did. But you've got two discrete groups. You've got the young kids that live their life in social media. I mean, everything from the burrito they eat at breakfast till the last thing they do in the day, they are documenting everything they do. We also have older folks doing the same thing, but not realizing. I'm going to give you an example. I did this literally 2 days ago. I was looking a genealogy thing up and was a family member, and I was trying to think, I need to look. I don't have that birth date. I need to look on their Facebook page and see if I can figure out what their birth date was. Well, it didn't take long. Somebody wished them a happy birthday on a certain time. Okay, well, I've got that part of the day. What year is that? Trying to figure out how old this individual is. And I was talking to my wife, and I said, I can't find the year. She said, give me just a minute. Starts going through the Facebook photos. They had taken a picture of a screen when they were in a hospital where they had had an x-ray done. They took a picture of the screen, which gave me name, date of birth, and two or three other identifiers. Well, okay, I had the information I needed, but I was just wanting to put it in my genealogy. But think about if I'm a cyber criminal.
The difference between regular crime and this whole area of cybercrime, number one, cybercrime is so enormous. It affects so many parts of our lives. But number two, I think most of us, whether you sit in your home in Sparta or Spencer or Salina or Jamestown, you feel relatively safe from quote-unquote regular crime. But anytime you open your email, it feels like there's almost a cybercrime waiting to happen.
It is very much a shared responsibility between everyone, and it's a societal issue. Like, there's no question about that. And that's kind of the interesting thing, is that whenever we go back to what you would consider to be traditional crime, whether it's drugs, theft, violence, you're right. Those tend to be kind of regionalized. Those are somewhat culturalized. You expect almost like drugs. That's a big city problem.
If I go to Nashville, I might run into that, you know.
Exactly.
Go to Miami or New York City.
But what you're dealing with is completely indiscriminate criminals whenever it comes to the internet. And then beyond that, the bad guys often see us as just Americans. Whether or not we see ourselves as that on a daily basis, the bad guys just really see us as Americans with technology. And so especially if you're a bad guy sitting in Nigeria or Central Africa, you see an American comparatively who is very wealthy, and so you're indiscriminately going to target them. The other aspect of it is you're just an email address to them. You're just a phone number to them. There's no face. There's no eyes that they have to look at. They're not going to figure out your Facebook profile or watch your TikTok videos. They only care that you've got US dollars. And so that's where it starts to become to them almost a victimless crime, because they don't have to interface with that. They don't have to interact with a human. And to them, it transcends geographical borders. They don't care about cities. They don't care about counties. They don't care about states. They see it as this type of target.
It also strikes me, Eric, and you've mentioned this when we visited in the past, that, you know, the regular criminal might think, okay, I'm going to go to that nice neighborhood. I'm going to target homes in that nice neighborhood. Whereas the cyber criminal just says, I'm going to send out 100,000 emails, and if I get 10 back, that's a win.
That's part of it. And, you know, kind of going back to the societal part of this, you also have to consider we've got two generations somewhat separated. I don't know when the Gen Xers become the cynical group, but we did. But you've got two discrete groups. You've got the young kids that live their life in social media. I mean, everything from the burrito they eat at breakfast till the last thing they do in the day, they are documenting everything they do. We also have older folks doing the same thing, but not realizing. I'm going to give you an example. I did this literally 2 days ago. I was looking at a genealogy thing up and was a family member, and I was trying to think, I need to look. I don't have that birth date. I need to look on their Facebook page and see if I can figure out what their birth date was. Well, it didn't take long. Somebody wished them a happy birthday on a certain time. Okay, well, I've got that part of the day. What year is that? Trying to figure out how much this, how old this individual is. And I was talking to my wife. And I said, I can't find the year. She said, give me just a minute. Starts going through the Facebook photos. They had taken a picture of a screen when they were in a hospital where they had had an x-ray done. They took a picture of the screen, which gave me name, date of birth, and two or three other identifiers. Well, okay, I had the information I needed, but I was just wanting to put it in my genealogy. But think about if I'm a cyber criminal.
Next week, our conversation continues on the changing face of cybercrime as we visit with Eric Brown and Regis Billings. We hope you'll be with us.